You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference?
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty Health Share is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm. But even then, he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq. Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now, 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today. What a beautiful day in the coffee shop. And as always, I'm looking to talk books with an author. So let's see who I can find. There's an author, and he's got a real special book on his table. It happens to be author Ron McDonald. How are you doing, Ron?
All right, Jesse. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. And just for the record, folks, nope, he's not a clown, although he does occasionally clown around. All right, and the title of your book is Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor. Now, for everybody who's a regular listener to my show or has checked out my bio, you ought to know that Arlington is an extremely special place for me. It is a place, one of those places I revere almost beyond all others. So, Ron, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your book?
Well, Arlington Anthology is a story about those people who are buried there on the property. There are well over 310,000 people buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And 25 to 30 are buried every day. And at the height of Vietnam, there were 40. And we have people from the Revolutionary War to now that are buried there. And what I did is I told their stories as if they were alive to tell their own stories. And that's what the book's really about, is about their stories. And it's not all military people, you know, it's common folk buried there also.
Even the crew of the Challenger, the body parts they couldn't identify are buried in a grave there.
Yeah, there's several mass graves. I mean, a lot of people don't know, but the Challenger astronauts are buried there. People from the Pentagon from 9/11 are buried there. But in the Rose Garden, the first people that were buried there is about 1,500 Union soldiers from the Rappahannock in the wilderness that just listed as unknown that were buried there in the Rose Garden.
I'm sure that is a little known fact, and I thank you for bringing facts like that to life, because history is one of those things that we should never lose sight of.
Well, there's a lot of people don't know is that on the property at the height of the Civil War, they created what they called Freedman's Village. And Freedman's Village was a collection of cabins. And the slaves that escaped out of Maryland and Virginia were brought up and came there, and they put them in the cabins, and they had their own gardens, and they taught them trades to assimilate into the society. And during the Civil War, there was a outbreak of scarlet fever and smallpox that hit both Washington and Arlington. And about 3,800 of them are buried on the property, just listed as citizen. And on top of that, there is about 1,500 Union African-American soldiers buried on the property. And of those, four are Medal of Honor recipients. And a lot of people don't know that the Medal of Honor was given to African-American Civil War soldiers. Actually probably around 20, I believe, before buried there on the property. The history is amazing. I mean, people have no idea and concepts of some of the things these people have done.
No, I think so many people gloss over history, and that's what kind of disturbs me with the current, let's get rid of all the Confederate monuments. In fact, North Carolina was actually a memorial to those who were conscripted or drafted into the South, the side on the South. And so I find it ironic tear down that one.
You know, there on the property, there's actually Confederate soldiers buried there on the property and Union soldiers. So, you know, I mean, we're given a birth date and we're given a death date, but it's the dash in between that represents a person's life. And it doesn't matter whether they're black or they're white or, you know, they're Asian or they're whatever. I mean, we're all Americans, and that's part of who we are. We're history. We're a conglomeration of different races and different beliefs. And the Union soldiers that are buried there, a lot of them were, as you said, conscripted into the, they never had slaves. They were just following what they thought was the right thing to do because of their state. So, I mean, you know, everybody fought for different reasons. You know, some fought for the state's rights, and some fought for slavery, and some fought for, you know, all different reasons. And so, I mean, I think to tear down any kind of history is detrimental to who we are.
I have to agree with you. And I've seen calls for doing things like getting rid of the graves at Arlington that are Confederate. And I'm like, that's desecration of a grave. Don't you dare touch that cemetery. I'm pretty possessive of Arlington.
Well, you should be. I mean, and every American citizen should be. You know, I mean, it's not whether they were North or South. They were Americans. Okay, above all, they were Americans. Yes, maybe what they believed in was wrong, and I believe it was wrong, you know. But they were all Americans, and that's the thing. I mean, there's good and there's bad in this country, and there's good and there's bad people. And no matter what, we are still Americans, and we have to respect each other's rights.
How
a good example.
Bring
a good
politics
example of,
to hallowed
of,
ground. I mean, how can you infuse politics into a hallowed ground such as Arlington?
Well, people have always tried to do that. I mean, you know, let me put a good example, okay? There's a revolutionary gentleman that's buried there on the property. His name is Brigadier James McCorbin. And he was a Revolutionary War soldier. And he was taken prisoner and placed on the Jersey, a British prison ship. I don't know if you know anything about the prison ships in the Revolutionary War, but they're pretty horrendous. They would take the masts off and they would sit them out in the middle of the harbor, and they would put the prisoners in the hold down below, and they never saw the light of day. They never got fresh air. They were fed whatever the British felt like giving them, scraps of feed. Dysentery was very common. There's rats on board. They had to defecate in buckets. I mean, the conditions were tremendously, atrocious. And so this gentleman was actually bayoneted and captured during Yorktown and placed in the hold of the Jersey. And he survived there for 3 years. I don't know if you can comprehend that, but being a survivor of 3 years in a hold of a ship like that is beyond me. But when he was released, George Washington made him a brigadier general and put him in charge of the Maryland militia. And when the War of 1812 started to raise its ugly head, that's when the British decided they wanted to raid the American ships. And he stood up for a guy's rights to have freedom of speech. And he was a pro-British gentleman, had his own newspaper. And, of course, the people were madly against him and angry. And what ensued is that they overran the publisher's newspaper and destroyed the presses. And Brigadier General James McCorbin was killed, beaten. He tried showing him his bayonet wounds from the Revolutionary War, and nobody would listen. But the thing is that the man stood up for freedom of speech. You know, the thing that he fought for, and freedom that everybody should have, you know, whether they're on one side or the other, give the person the right to speak what he wants to say. I mean, that's who we are. I mean, we've always had disagreements, but never to this extent that we have to have violence. I think there's something else going on, but that's me. So anyway, but I mean, the stories are not any different than they are today. You know, I mean, freedom of speech is still being fought over. So, I mean, we can learn lessons from the dead that the living need to learn.
Well, like I said, to me, Arlington is a sacred, hallowed ground. And there's only one other place I've visited that has moved me anywhere near the amount that Arlington has. And that was the memorial to the USS Arizona out in Hawaii.
Mm.
And I just don't see how people can insinuate politics into such hallowed ground.
Well, I don't talk about politics in the book. You know, I just talk about what these people have done for our country. And I think that's what we really need to do is take the politics out of everything and just see what people have done. You know, I didn't want that to be part of what the book's about. It's not about that. It's about, you know, what people have done for the country. I mean, there's some incredible stories. I mean, there's one of a Sergeant Billy Allen, Sonny Hill, they called him. And Billy Allen was a Vietnam medic, And his fire base got overran, and he went around taking care of all the soldiers like he was supposed to do. When a mortar shell came in, it blew off both of his legs. He tourniqueted his buddy tourniqueted his legs up, and he crawled around his stomach and his elbows taking care of everybody until he finally passed out from blood loss. I mean, there's General John Gibbon. Yeah, I mean, there's General John Gibbon, who went through and survived Fredericksburg, which was a mass slaughter thanks to Burnside. And then he was the one who held off the final assault charge, Pickett's charge, at Gettysburg. His brigade was the front line there. And then he was in the House and Appomattox with Lee and Grant. And then when the war was finally over, they shipped him out to the 7th Cavalry, to Custer's brigade. And he survived that. He was in charge of the supply wagons, and Custer went ahead of the supply wagons. And by the time he arrived, Custer had been slaughtered. There's Corporal Ira Hayes, and everybody knows Corporal Ira Hayes because he's part of the National Monument there of the flag raising of Iwo Jima. He was a Puma Indian, a flag raiser, and his story is very sad. He ended up dying in a gutter, and he was an alcoholic eventually from not being able to. It was a form of PTSD is what he had, post-stress syndrome. But he couldn't accept the fact that, you know, they were honoring him when all of his buddies were dead. And he became an alcoholic and died in a drainage ditch full of water. I mean,
that is a horrible way.
There's just one story after another. I mean, I could go on. I mean, there's another one, Herbert Versage, who was a Vietnam War vet. And this guy was held captive for 2 years in a cage. It was probably 6 feet by 5 feet by 3 feet. And, you know, fed whatever the maggoty food. But the last things that the rest of the other POWs remember is him singing God Bless America as they were toting him off out into the jungle.
Wow.
You know, I mean, these are the kind of stories that reside there. People have done some amazing things for this country and sacrificed. And they didn't, oftentimes what happens is they don't do it for country, or they don't do it for a flag, or they don't do it for a border or anything like that. They do it for the guy next to them, because that's all their family they have. You know, it's not the fact that they're doing it for our country. They're doing it for the guy next to them to try and save their friends. And none of them consider themselves, the Medal of Honor guys, a lot of them, when you read their interviews and stuff, don't consider themselves heroes. They just consider themselves survivors.
Well, that's very true, because I actually have read quite a number of those and had the honor of meeting Medal of Honor recipients in person. Now, never convinced one to come on the air with me because they never wanted the spotlight on them, but I'm working on it.
Well, you know, a lot of the guys don't want to tell their stories, and rightfully so. You know, they'll tell it to another soldier, but they won't tell their story.
Well,
to their family members.
I keep telling them, I'll get you a soldier to talk to, because I have several co-hosts that are vets, so I can get them that soldier to talk to on air.
I have a story in the book of a woman who was married to one of the guys that's buried there, and what was amazing is that one day she opened up a drawer and found his Medal of Honor. He had never told her about it. He just always kept it in a drawer.
Wow. To find that kind of a medal stuffed in a drawer would be beyond the pale.
They don't consider themselves heroes, you know? They consider
themselves... No, they don't. They fought for their man to their left and to their right, although I believe many of them originally did sign up for love of, you know, country and family and things like that. But when it comes down to it, there's two things I've learned, and I've talked to many a warrior. There's no atheist in a foxhole, and you're fighting for the man to your left and to your right. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, you're very correct. I mean, that's exactly what it really comes down to. I mean, that's the guy you have to depend on, you know? The stories are not all military. I have several of the nurses' stories in there, too. One from they called them the Battling Babes of Bataan. They were the nurses of Bataan that were taken captured and held prisoner. I have one in there. In fact, the first one on the book is a woman. Her name was Vinnie Remy Hoxie. She was a sculptress, a prodigy. And what makes her unique is that she was picked by Abraham Lincoln to do his bust. She was 18 years old. And he picked her primarily not only because she was talented, but because, first of all, she came from a very poor background, just like himself. And the thing is that she spent a half an hour every day for 5 months with the man. And then that time she got to know him. She studied his face. She studied his mannerisms and watched him, talked with him. And
I can only imagine the conversations they had.
Exactly. I mean, I think I would have been blown away, just been a fly on the wall to listen to that. But I mean, when he was assassinated, she finally had finished the bust. And then when he was assassinated, she was the first woman commissioned by the United States government to do a full-length statue. So they gave her his coat that he wore that night at the theater. She went to Italy, to the Carrara marble pits where Michelangelo picked out the marble for the Pietà on David, sculpted in Italy, brought it back to the United States. And today it stands in the Capitol Rotunda for every American citizen to see. And they say it's the most lifelike rendition of Lincoln there is.
I can believe above it. I really can.
Above her grave is a statue of Sappho, which she sculpted.
Wow. Sounds like she was truly talented.
Story after another. And some of these things these women have done, you know, that these nurses have done, are amazing. You know, there's one nurse that actually was there in at Dachau, you know, and witnessed and the atrocities that were done. There's another, her name was Hopkins, and she was actually a Confederate nurse, and she was on the Alabama, I think dollar bill or something like that, or coin or something, as I remember. But she was called the Florence Nightingale of the South, and she would go in amongst the battlefield and take care of the soldiers. And she eventually was wounded, actually, at one point and shot in the thigh while she was taking care of a soldier out on the battlefield. But I mean, you know, women have done some incredible things that they don't really get recognized for, because a lot of people think it's just a military museum for a lot of men. There's a lot of women buried there. At the time, men and women were buried together, the husbands and their wives. But today, it's not that way because there's not enough room.
Right. Today, you can get buried there if your spouse is there, but it's a lot harder. And that's why a lot of people choose not to be buried there, actually.
Yeah, exactly. There's actually a new section, which, in fact, they just enlarged the property, I believe. It was supposed to be filled by 2020. But they've actually, there's new ground that's being used now that's going to be used to make the Arlington larger. But probably the freshest ground right now and the hardest for a lot of people to deal with is in Section 20. And that's where our Afghan soldiers and Iraqi soldiers are being buried there. And you have people that, you know, they come and they'll leave things by the grave. They'll sleep by a grave. They'll talk to them. And so it's a little bit more of a raw nerve, and you know, it's because it's more recent than anywhere else.
Right. Now, I have to admit that I'm a bit of an Arlington buff. I've been there many times, probably well more than most, and because I live in the area. And I have visited quite a number of graves, including, I think, one of my favorites that I just had to go see, even though it's a famous one, I had to go see Audie Murphy's grave. And then the other one I had a blast visiting, and there was a section dedicated to glider pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that one was fascinating because gliders were essentially wood and fabric, and these people were trusting their lives to a glorified kite.
Yeah. When you talked about Audie Murphy, I have him in the book, actually, and I actually have one of his poems. He used to write poetry, but I have one of his poems that he wrote. But he was a sufferer from PTSD, but he would carry a pistol, actually, on the set, and it would scare the people who were on the set. And he always had one underneath his pillow.
Yeah.
I also have a guy, one of the guys in the book is the guy who actually taught Lindbergh how to fly.
Wow.
Yeah. Lindbergh came to him with $400, and in those days, that was a hell of a lot of money. And he said that he pretty much learned it practically in one day. He was a natural at it. But the guy, his took ill, and Lindbergh paid all of his doctor bills before he passed away. He was put in the hospital and used to visit him and paid all of his doctor bills for him.
That's amazing. And that's a story most people will never hear. And see, kind of what I do with my regular show. I do international and military war or military news, but I pick out the odd stuff that doesn't make the mainstream media. I'll talk about the Iranian elections. I'm not going to tell you what Senator Stupid said on the campaign trail, but I'll tell you all about what's going on in Iran's elections, because that stuff doesn't make the news, and I think it's important. Even if it doesn't immediately affect us, as in it's not our leaders, it does affect a lot of national policy, and I think it's important for people to know it. So
yeah, I mean, you know, that is an important fact.
I've kind of become the station expert on North Korea, which is becoming quite the hot topic these days.
Yeah, that's one group of veterans which you really don't hear a lot of, you know, are the Korean War vets. I mean, you hear about the Vietnam vets, but you don't hear about the Korean War vets.
I am blessed to know several.
The veterans from as the Vietnam guys do. And of course, those Vietnam guys, I feel, you know, I mean, they did not deserve what they received when they came home. They were treated atrociously.
They were. Many of them never got that thank you and that welcome home that they deserved. And many of them couldn't bear.
To me, that's important. It's important to me that, you know, people recognize them for what they did. You know, I mean, that's a war that, you know, they didn't really want to go to. And a lot of their friends died in it, and they got no respect when they came home and were treated like they were baby killers, which is, you know, so wrong. And
one of the other things today, I've learned about by living amongst the warriors, as I just classify all members of the armed forces, no one prays for peace more than the men and women sent to fight the battles.
How true. Yeah, there's a couple of quotes by... in fact, I think General Lee quoted after watching the horrendous onslaught at Fredericksburg, that, you know, Burnside sent one brigade after another into a crossfire. And is that if war was not so horrendous, you know, and so ugly, you know, we would get used to it. And it's so true. I mean. I find the Civil War more enlightening than any of the other wars, I guess, maybe because I just feel close to it or something for some reason. But the numbers were just, I mean, atrocious. I mean, Gettysburg, 51,000 people, you know. And what you find out after studying is that, you know, a majority of the people, soldiers, more died from disease than they did from a bullet.
Exactly. Infection.
Dysentery or whatever. Infections, yeah. And in fact, it is the story of Letterman. Letterman was the first one actually to bring on triage, in a sense, to the battlefield. But, I mean, talks about the piles of arms and legs, you know, from the amputations. And you know, when they ran out of sutures, they used horsetail. They boiled horsetail for sutures.
Wow. I didn't know they used horsetail. I figured they used something, but I didn't know what.
Yeah, when they ran out of the supplies, they had to do something. So they would cut the tails of the horses and they would boil it, and they would use it as suture material.
That's fascinating.
They would do the amputations, and they would clean their knives on their apron or whatever, and then go back and cut another person. I mean, you know, things that's never done today. I mean. You know, so that's the reason why a lot of those guys didn't survive that, or they didn't have any morphine or anything like that, or any morphine at all, you know, or chlorophyll or anything like that, or not chlorophyll, but chloroform to deaden the pain or anything like that to put them out. They would either run out of stuff. So, you know, let's give them a shot of whiskey and here, bite down on this while I cut your leg off. You know,
I mean,
a lot of these guys died from shock.
I remember watching MASH. Reruns type thing, syndication reruns on demand, and I heard it described as meatball surgery, and I can only imagine what people would have described this as, the true form of meatball surgery.
Well, it was butchery in a lot of ways. I mean, they had no idea what the hell they were doing half the time. Well, not only that is the bullets would go in and would shatter bone. As today, it's different. you know, because it would roll and it would shatter the bone. So there was no way to be able to even put the bone back together. It would have to cut. The thing about the Civil War is that the technology outweighed the tactics, and the tactics were old school tactics where they were using. They'd line up and they'd march forward. And of course, you know, you have a cannon with a shot, and they would blast a field of 20 guys would fall down after that, you know, from the cannon shot. And it's, you know, I mean, pure slaughter, you know.
Now, there were some people that did start catching on to the guerrilla warfare tactics during the Civil War and the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably saved
I mean,
a number of
lives.
That's
one of the reasons why we won in the Revolutionary War. That's one of the reasons why we won the South, the southern portion of the campaign of the Revolutionary War.
So what was your absolute favorite story in the book?
Wow.
All right, well,
you pick a tough question.
All right, we'll make it a little easier.
I have so many. I mean,
what was the hardest one to research? How's that?
Hardest one to research? Oh, let me think. That's a hard question to answer because, you know, I mean, it took me 8 years to write the book. So,
now
it's hard to remember the
researching
of that.
We'll move on while
but
you
I have. I mean, there's a lot of favorites that I have in there. I mean, I found there's a couple of that. Just hit nerves, you know, that I found that really struck me.
Now,
I was actually amazed, or I was really amazed, and something I didn't know about Robert Lincoln. He's buried on the property. That's Lincoln's son. And he's buried on the property, but what a lot of people don't know is that after, you know, his father passing away and witnessing his father passing in that room, he actually also was there for Garfield when he was assassinated, and then he was there for McKinley. And so after a while, he just said, "I'm not going to any more presidential things," because he had witnessed and been there at certain sites, and he refused any presidential invitations after that.
I can't say I blame him. He probably felt like the ultimate bad luck charm.
Yeah, that's exactly what he felt. And and then, you know, his mother wouldn't talk to him after he placed her in the insane asylum for a while. And she got out because of a letter she had gotten to somebody. But she was a recluse the rest of her life and wore black the rest of her life. But yeah, she never talked to him after that. Just kind of sad.
So what was your, how about your favorite one to research? Do we have one of those? Or the one that moved you the most?
There's a couple in there there is one that researching about the guys who were the in the B-17s. You know, each one of those planes carried 10 guys, and so when a plane went down, they lost a good, you know, 10 guys sometimes. And the story I was researching, you know, I had researched into about what was part of the, you know, what it was like to be in a B-17. That's the fun thing, but that was doing the research was, you know, I was learning as I went along because I didn't know a lot of things. I learned about what it was like to live in the trenches in World War I, and a lot of people have no comprehension. In doing research, I went to several things. I went to, obviously, military archives. I also went to Arlington's archives, but I also went to historical events where it was eyewitness events of history. And on eyewitness accounts tell of what it was like to live in and survive in the trenches in World War I. And, you know, people would be amazed at what they, you know, I was always amazed by what I came out and found. I had no comprehension about it when I walked into it. You know, I just thought, oh, that's a cool, interesting story. And then I got involved. And it's like, wow, I can't believe what these people went through, you know. I was just amazed, especially World War I, because a lot of people have no idea as to what trench warfare was like, and it was all not exactly what they were. I mean, if you ever saw that movie, the one with the horse that Spielberg did, I can't remember the name of the film. I'm sorry, but I mean that's what it was like in World War I. I mean, it was muddy, and they used the horses to haul the artillery. I mean, it was a mess.
Well, we have come to the point where it is time to take that ever blessed thing called a commercial break. So Ron's going to hang out with us through the commercial break, and I'm going to pour myself a cup of coffee because goodness knows I need to refill my mug after this one. And we will see you on the other side.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words, making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your healthcare? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
All right, I thank all y'all for hanging in there with us while we paid those radio station bills. Yes. Oh, Ron is just such a fascinating guest, but I must pull him away from all these fascinating stories for just a few brief moments. All right, Ron, you said it took you eight years to write the book. Was that because you were doing the research to get it right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. That, and I was working at the same time, so I was trying to do two things at the same time. I write everything out in pencil form by doing the research, and then I would go back and write it again. And then what I would want to do is I wanted to place it in certain areas within the book. I don't put the Civil War people together with the Revolutionary War, and I don't put them in categories. I place them all over the place. You know, Civil War could be one story. A World War II guy could be another one. A World War I could be another one. I mixed them up because I think that's the way it ought to be anyway. You know, it makes it more interesting instead of just having to go from one section to another.
Now, what was the most recent person that you covered?
I mean, in the book?
Yes.
Or are you talking about in the one I'm working on?
No, in the one that you've got out. We'll get to the one you're working on in a minute.
The most recent one was a guy from Iraq. And actually, it's a dog story. He and the gang, his troop, whatever, were stationed in Iraq, and they had a dog that was their kind of it was a stray dog that they kind of adopted and made their dog. And then when he was to come back home, he came back home. He wasn't able to bring the dog back because of military reasoning. And so he went through a whole process of trying to find the dog again. He had his friends look for the dog, and he had certain people looking for the dog. Eventually, he found the dog, and then the hard part was trying to get the dog out of the country. He tried to go through through Jordan to have the dog shipped out, and that didn't work because they got blocked off. And eventually, he got connected with somebody, and I think the dog was shipped over to Saudi Arabia, and then from there back over to him. And the dog recognized him right away when they came right off the plane, and was with him up until the day that he died. Actually, in the park, he had a heart attack in the park and dropped. And the dogs, he had his two dogs stayed by his side.
But wow.
That's actually one of the yeah. So, I mean, the loyalty of dogs are just amazing. Anyway, but
it's unconditional.
That's the most recent one.
That's all you can say about the love of any pet. It is unconditional.
Yep, that's what they're here for. Teach us that.
Now, your book is technically classified as fiction. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to give it another name, and I'm going to explain why. I want to call it faction, because while it is quote-unquote fiction, it is so heavily based on fact, it could almost be called nonfiction. But unfortunately, by publication standards, it must be classified fiction. So I'm going to reclassify it as faction. And I picked up that term from a very well-known number one New York Times bestselling author, Brad Thor, because he uses that term to describe his own thriller writing. So I'd say that puts you in good company, Ron.
Oh, well, it's pretty nice company.
Oh, Brad is an amazing author. In fact, I'm definitely going to clue him in about this book, because he is a history and military buff like no other. Now, before
you probably would love it then.
Oh, if I know anything about this man, who I am an avid fan of his. In fact, some people would call me a rabid fan of his. And he's the only author. I only mention traditionally well-known published authors on air because I don't want my Indian self-published favorites to feel slighted if I don't mention them. So I've kept a policy of I only mention well-known traditional published. So he is one of those authors. I get the Kindle version. I get the signed hardback every book that comes out. And he does a book a year. But yes,
wow.
I am a huge Brad Thor fan. But like I said, I think that puts you in pretty good company there, Ron.
Well, that's awful special, but, that's my first book, so.
Oh, he's got
17
now.
It's hard writing, because there's so much research to be involved,
Exactly. And you can't just make it up if you don't know. At least not
true.
To be period accurate.
Well, there's always somebody going to tell you that it's wrong someplace. So.
Yes, and I think the research that goes into books is what makes them so phenomenal. All right, so now that we've gotten a little bit of the book talk out of the way, I'm going to skip most of my usual writing tidbits questions, except for one. What advice would you give to a new writer who's trying to research something? Where should they start?
It depends on what they're trying to research or what their book is about. The internet is an extremely, unique source nowadays, but you have to be careful that you're only dealing with the actual historical facts, if you're doing something that's along that line. But you can find out all kinds of information on the internet, and that's, you know, it's wonderful. But you can also find a lot of information in bookstores, and there's archives, National Archives, that you can look under too. But yeah, the internet is just a gold mine of resources nowadays. It's like a library, you know, in your hand in a way.
As long as you're dealing with a reputable site.
Exactly. And I was only dealing with, you know, I was only dealing with sites that were reputable, you know, like Home of Heroes, which basically recount of the Medal of Honor recipients and how they received their award and what it was about. So, I mean, you know, things like that. Eyewitness accounts to history.
Yeah, I'd call that reputable. Now, did you ever go back into things like newspaper archives?
Sometimes I went to letters. Letters that were written, let's say, in the Civil War, or, you know, things about like that that I could actually be able to quote that they had written about or they talked about in it. Another way of finding information was those kind of things. And archives that basically dealt with the actual historical facts of how this guy received his medal and why he received it, because they give you a synopsis of why, of what happened that he received the award for. So.
I think that is fantastic. And I've read several Medal of Honor stories. I haven't had the time to read them all, but I have read quite a few, because there's more Medal of Honor winners out there than people, I think, realize.
Yeah, and unfortunately, sometimes they give it posthumously, you know. And in fact, a lot of people don't know that, but in the early, like World War One, they actually would give out a Medal of Honor for the Army and a Medal of Honor for the Navy. So, I mean, it's not unusual that there's actually one guy in the book who received two Medal of Honors, one from the Navy, one from the Army. And then you also have the French Medal of Honor. Today it's only one medal representing all, but in those days it was actually separated and they actually would give it out twice sometimes.
That is a fantastic piece of trivia. So what was your favorite part of tackling such a huge topic? You must have been drinking from a fire hose.
No, I don't drink. I'm not a drinker, but...
I meant the amount of information you had to come up with and the amount of people you had to choose from.
I know what you were saying. I was being facetious. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Sarcasm is quite allowed and sometimes encouraged.
I just got involved in it. There was one guy, which actually he wrote his own book. And I researched the book that he wrote, and his name was Crook. And what a lot of people don't know is Crook spent 50 years in the White House. He was Abraham Lincoln's bodyguard. And the night that Abraham Lincoln was going to go to the theater, he was his close bodyguard, and he had been on for 24 hours. And he wanted to go to the theater with Lincoln, but Lincoln turned him down, said, no, no, you go home. And that night, he said goodbye to him. Lincoln said goodbye to him when he always said goodnight. And he woke up the next morning to find out that he had been assassinated. And the guy who took his place that night, the bodyguard that took his place that night, had never, after that, he's never been the same. He regretted everything that he had, you know, it ruined him. But Crook was there when Lincoln was brought back to the White House after he was assassinated. And he was placed in a room that Lincoln had never been in before. And they basically dressed him and took care of him and made him ready for the coffin. He was there for that. He witnessed 12 presidents coming in the White House, in and out of the White House. He recalls Grant, and Grant used to call his wife the general. And he was very much a very family man and would sit and have breakfast every morning with the whole family and all. And, after work, Grant would go down to one of the hotels down the street. And I think it's the Roosevelt now, I'm not sure. And he would sit in the lobby and he would have a whiskey. And everybody would want something from him. And they would all come around and ask him for favors and all that. Well, Grant called them lobbyists. And today the word stands as lobbyists. And But I mean, he talks about Garfield. He was there when Garfield was shot and lingered on for such a long time. And he was a good friend of his because he was so close to him. And he went out and knew that his favorite soup was rabbit. So he went out and made rabbit and shot the rabbits and came back and made squirrel soups. Excuse me, and made it for him. But I mean, you know, he'd been there for 12 presidents and saw 12. He passed away during Woodrow Wilson's administration.
Wow.
Yeah. It doesn't tell all of that whole history of being in there for 12 presidents, but it tells about several of the presidents that he, you know, it's an interesting book to find the little aspects about each one of them.
That's one building I think everybody wishes if walls could talk, that we could make that one talk. I'm sorry, but that would be one of those.
If there was a place where you wanted to be a fly on the wall, that's one place you would find fascinating. I think you would be amazed. I think with the things that went on in that building, good and bad.
Oh, I could probably hang out and listen to those walls for days. I have such a huge fascination. And I'm not into the politics stuff. I'm into the oddities and the unique little things that most people don't even think about.
Yeah, they remodeled that place. It was only a shell of a place. When Truman was president, the piano fell through at one point. And that's at the point when Truman said, let's get this thing fixed. And so they basically moved Truman and the family out of the house. They gutted the whole inside of the house, of Washington White House. I mean, it was a shell. All it was the outside walls. And they redid
I've
the
heard
whole
tell
place
that
back to
those
the way
were
it was
supposedly
supposed to be.
Only standing out of force of habit.
Well, you know, it was burned too at one point.
Yes.
When the British came in 1912, in fact, there's actually a story in the book that, you know, about that whole account. And Dolly Madison was the one who took out the portrait of Washington. They would have destroyed that too. They went into the Congress and they stood up on top of the desk and ended up burning that too. So, yeah.
I know some American history, but I've never claimed to be an expert.
Well, I've never been an expert either. I've learned. I just, you know, from reading the accounts and reading about history, I find history fascinating because it's who we are. It's how we came about to be. And it's the reason why we are the way we are, you know, and that's the reason why I like history. You don't learn from history, you're going to make the same mistakes.
Exactly. And I think that it's a shame that more history isn't taught in the current school system. I'm not trying to drag you into a political debate, but I'm just going to leave it at that. I think it's just a shame that more history isn't taught to our students.
I agree with you. I think it's atrocious, to be honest with you. And, you know, a lot of it, too, is because they don't make it interesting. They don't make it exciting. You know, I mean, you have to feed the juices so that the students are excited about what they're doing. And that sometimes, you know, you get a 10-year teacher or whatever, and I'm not knocking teachers or anything like that. I'm just saying people get lackadaisical and they don't try new things and try to, you know, but they just don't, either that or they're not allowed to do it, you know.
Right. Well, what, have you come up with a favorite research project or, actually, what are you, you said you're working on another book.
Yeah,
what?
I've been trying to get the other one done. In this book, there's actually 118 people in the book. And right now I have about 45, 46 in the new one that I'm working on. I have to get the first one, you know, let people know about it and sold out there. So, but the second one I've been working on, I don't know. I mean, a lot of interesting things that I've been finding out. I'm working on one about a guy named Lieutenant Frank Bufia, and he was a Vietnam lieutenant who was at Hamburger Hill. But, you know, I found out about MacArthur. I didn't know that MacArthur and his father were the only two father-son Medal of Honor recipients.
Oh, now that's a fact I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And I found that out. But they're the only two father-son Medal of Honor recipients that are buried there on the property.
Wow.
MacArthur received the Medal of Honor for the Philippines. And in some respects, I don't understand why. I mean, he didn't do anything heroic, you know, in a sense. You know, he didn't sacrifice himself for the whatever. I mean, I don't understand why they gave him the Medal of Honor, you know, in that respect. Because a lot of the guys that did receive it, you know, either they received it posthumously by saving other people or done some incredible things. And
they gave their last full measure.
Say that hit the invasion of Luzon and all that and the Philippines, you know, by MacArthur is pretty amazing. But anyway.
Yeah, a lot of them have given their last full measure for that bit of metal on a ribbon, basically.
Well, you know, they didn't do that for that.
No, but
you know, they didn't want that.
That wasn't their thought when they were doing it by any stretch of any imagination. In fact, talking modern day heroes, I don't know if you know too much about Rob O'Neill, the man who shot Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, I know. I know about that. Yeah.
Well, he has a book out, and he had gotten a Silver Star and told his mom, "Okay, I'm gonna. I promise you, Mom, I won't get another one." Well, of course, he got a second one for the raid on Osama bin Laden. He's like, "Sorry, Mom," because obviously, getting a medal wasn't his intention ever. And he actually has a book out, and it's an excellent book.
Yeah, I've heard about the book. I haven't read it myself, but I've heard about it.
Oh, I have a feeling you'd love it.
Yeah, those SEAL teams are just amazing, guys. To go through all that training is just amazing. And so
they are some of the best warriors this nation has. And I'll let you in on one other little secret. And I'll probably get a few nasty grams from some of them. Because, yes, having had a husband who was Special Forces, I know more than one. You get them in private or at a kid's birthday party and they're big teddy bears. get them out on the battlefield.
The
they're tigers.
Yeah, there's a guy in the book that a Vietnam vet and he was a Special Forces Green Beret, and he would have received the Medal of Honor probably twice, and before the one he actually got. But they were always sent back into Laos and Cambodia, and so you know on special missions. And that nobody would know about. And that's the reason why he would never receive the medal, because of that. But, that guy's pretty incredible. Some of the things these guys have done. But kill or be killed. Survival.
Like we said, they're fighting for their man to their left and to their right. Now, I give everyone who visits the coffee shop a chance to put out any and all social media contact information. And as you are a photographer, which is something we have not yet touched on, why don't you give out your photography website as well as your social media relating to the book?
Okay. My photography website, it's www.ronmacdonald.com. That's my photography website. And if you want to get the book, you can go to outskirtspress.com/Arlington Anthology, and you can find it there. It's also available on Amazon in book form and in Kindle form. So you just look up Arlington Anthology. Some people may have a hard time with anthology, but anthology is ANTHOLOGY, and that's how you can find the book.
Well, I thank you very much for being a guest in the coffee shop, Ron. I have a feeling you and I could talk for hours.
Probably. Probably. It's been an honor talking to you about Arlington and about the people that gave so much for our country. I just want everybody to know that, too, I'm donating a portion of the proceeds for every book that I sell to the veterans. So please do pick up the book if you get a chance to, because you are going to be not only helping a veteran.
Well, I thank you, Ron, and that is a very generous thing you're doing. And for those of you who are
I wasn't there in the war, but it's my way of, I wasn't there in any of the wars or in Vietnam or anything like that, but it's my way of giving back to the people who gave so much.
All right, and for those of you trying to track me down, you can find me on Twitter @Jesse's POV, Or you can email me at the station, JESSIE@KLRNradio.com. If you're interested in anything about any of my authors and you missed their contact information, or if you're interested in being a guest in the coffee shop. And on that note, folks, I am going to pour myself a cup of coffee and grab this copy of Arlington Anthology off the table and settle down to find out more about our nation's heroes. And I will see you next time.